Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain!
Not here.
Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a Star Trek podcast about Star Trek Discovery and other things also from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
And we have a guest today, Adam. Our guest is comic artist J.K. Woodward, who did the Mirror Broken TNG arc. You're working on more of these Mirror comics, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, actually, the sequel already came out through the Mirror.
Yeah.
And that was a weekly thing that came out. I was just doing the backup story, and then we had five different artists doing the other stories because can't really do a whole comic every week.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
Not drink as much as I do.
yeah, these are balances to be maintained.
Yeah, and then there's one out that's out right now called Through the Mirror, and that's where we have an infiltrator from the Mirror universe in the regular TNG universe.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Terra Incognita is Through the Mirror, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was fun to hang out with you at the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas because it was one of the funnest things was that you were seeing people cosplaying as characters that you kind of designed. Like,
yeah, that's never happened before. Usually the characters I draw are characters that have already been designed. So you see them cosplayed and you're like, yeah, big deal.
Yeah.
Did you get to sign people?
I hadn't thought of it.
But sign my loaf. It must be weird, right? Because like they probably don't generally know what you look like until you get up on a panel. So you have like at least early on in the con,
I can walk among them.
Yeah, you can see people cosplaying as something you thought of,
and a lot of times getting it wrong. But I try not to criticize.
Oh, that has to hurt so bad.
Oh, I specifically designed these characters to look a specific way for a specific reason, and then these people think they can just come in and just redesign it on me.
What you're saying is these people aren't jacked enough to be Mirror Universe people?
Yeah, they didn't put in the work. They didn't put in the work that it requires.
Yeah. If you're going to cosplay as a Mirror Universe jail pipes, you got to hit the gym for a good 18 months.
Take some steroids. Do what it takes.
You don't have the lats for jail pipes. Most people don't.
Yeah. We saw a deflated Khan Noonien Singh walking around at the con.
Even a fake chest?
I mean, no. He was just an older gentleman with beautiful hair, but he didn't have the physique for it.
Oh, I saw that guy. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Khan, if he survived the Genesis blast. And just lived to a ripe old age on the Genesis planet, I think that'd be great.
From Hell's Pilates gym, I stab at thee. He's toned, but not buff.
You know?
You've probably spent more time thinking about the Mirror Universe than Adam or I, and it's got its own look and feel that is similar but distinct from mainline TNG. Like, how do you think about designing that universe?
Oh, it's pirates. It's Starfleet uniforms as pirates. I mean, that's all it's ever been, really. I wanted to go a more sort of fascist thing but with it. I wanted to go, I was originally going to give them the like high leather boots, the whole Nazi look.
Yeah.
Because there was always this sort of Terrans for Terran kind of fascism to it, but we decided to have more fun and go pirate. I mean, you can go one of two ways. I mean,
pirates are more fun.
Pirates are way more fun than Nazis. But, well, I don't know. I don't think you want to meet either of them, but... Right. But I mean, I'm glad we went the way we went with it because it turned out that Discovery went the fascist route and they were doing almost the exact story I wanted to do originally.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that would have been, I would have had to accuse them of ripping me off.
Yeah. It's interesting, like the, because we've also been reading the Succession comics, which are all set,
yeah,
set sort of in the Mirror Universe. And yeah, that's really true. Like the imagery that they picked for the costumes and stuff for the show are all, you know.
Oh, it's almost Frank Herbert in their approach to like what the Empire looks like, which was a lot of fun to see. Yeah,
sure.
We went the other way.
Yeah, the Padishah Emperor Giorgio.
Yeah.
JK, when you say we, could you give us a little bit of a picture of how the comic books work as projects? I think Ben and I talk a lot about how film projects work as projects and like the relationships between the people, but I know very little about how these stories get made, who gets to decide on what those stories are, and like how much latitude you personally have with your own creative choices.
Well, it all starts with an 8-ball of Coke at CBS Studios.
They have the best Coke.
We euphemistically refer to that as a writer's meeting, but...
Disney, no good Coke at Disney, right?
No, they don't know what they're doing.
Their franchises suffer from it.
Yeah, clearly. No, well, in this case, it started from a style guide. CBS was doing a Mirror Universe style guide,
mm-hmm.
And there was no TNG. So I started designing characters, and as I was doing it, I started getting into it, and I started thinking about, you know, who these characters were, and the more I thought about it, the more I said, there might be a story here. So we brought it over to the Scott and Dave Tipton, who I worked with on Harlan Ellison's City on the Edge of Forever recently, and mm-hmm. The Star Trek Doctor Who crossover, and said, what do you think? Can we do something with this? And I had already designed the look of the characters, and immediately we went right to the editors, and boom.
Wow.
Off it went. Then you know, I had, you know, meetings with them coming up with like plot ideas and where we're going to go with it. And,
how do you get into a situation where you're being tapped to design the characters for a style guide? I mean, like the network has to be like...
It all starts with an 8-ball of Coke. I had been, I guess that happened slowly over the years. I'd been doing the Star Trek comics. It started doing covers and then single issues. And I, you know, kept working in that regard, and then got to know CBS because they're there for the approvals.
Yeah.
I think Risa at CBS really liked my work, and I think that's probably where it came from there. Also, I do kind of this hyper-realistic stuff, not quite as comic books, so that lends itself more to like product lines and stuff.
Yeah, your look is so unique compared to any other comics that I've ever read. I'm an idiot when it comes to comics. Why does it look that way? Why does it look so different from pen and ink comics that I'm used to reading?
Yeah, it's because it's not pen and ink. It's I actually paint in gouache and in designer's gouache. You mentioned it was different looking.
Gouache is good old raisins and peanuts, right?
Yeah. It's exactly. I don't know. People always ask what gouache is, and I have no idea. It's a paint I use. I mean,
they had it at the art store.
Yeah, they had it at the art store. It blends well. It reactivates when it gets wet. Like no, I'm not gonna make that joke.
So say we all.
We would never do any of that type of material.
No, let's
on
keep
this
it highbrow like it usually is. Yeah. But I mean, it's a very versatile paint to use, and it dries quickly, so it's good for advertising. And I've always been a painter, mostly out of necessity, because when I was in high school, everybody else was drawing. I started painting because I was making money painting like Iron Maiden stuff on the back of jean jackets or you know, Black Sabbath jackets and stuff. I'm aging myself, but. But I mean, so that's kind of where it all started.
You're 24, and, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. Everything comes back around. Yeah, I could be 24. I was always wondering what would that look like if I was doing a comic that way, and is it possible? And I kind of proved it was. Well, except Alex Ross proved it before me, but that's another comic artist that started painting that same style about 10 years before me.
Man, well, it kind of looks like, to me, like, I mean, there's frames in here where I feel like I know the shot that you looked at as reference.
Oh, that's probably true. I freeze frame like about like 600 pictures of Picard's expressions or right. Patrick Stewart's expressions, and then like post them all like wallpaper my studio with it. And then, so I have everything in front of me, and a lot of times, in
like
fact,
a
most
serial
of the time,
killer would.
Don't
like,
let yeah, Patrick yeah. Stewart ever find out about this.
That would be awkward if he stopped by. Oh, don't, yeah, you don't want to go in there. But yeah, it's definitely reference heavy. You can't do likenesses without reference, not photorealistically. So, you know.
Were you also ever, or are you currently, a wrestling enthusiast? Because I definitely see like Captain Lou Albano in Mirror Universe Riker. Were there other inspirations for the Mirror Universe versions of these characters?
I don't know that wrestling, that's the case. I think I dropped out of my interest dropped at 13, where, you know, most of us did.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Okay.
Very healthy.
But I mean, if you look at the fight scene between in issue two between Riker and Picard, there is a suplex in there.
Yeah. Yeah, there absolutely is.
There is a chair being thrown. but mostly that fight was actually modeled after, what was it called? They Live?
Oppenheimer,
nice. You know, speaking of wrestling, yeah, that alleyway scene that just went on forever and ever, and seemed like it was going to end like 20 times.
Yeah,
we kind of went for that.
That's awesome.
So there is kind of a wrestling thing in there, I guess. But actually, I was going for more of a Viking thing with Riker, with his braided beard and his, you know, yeah. scar on the side of his face.
I know a guy with a lazy eye and a forked braided beard like that, and I was like. Ring a bell? No?
No.
We'll beep that out. We'll beep that out.
I fucking hate that guy.
I mean, this kind of came out like very similar timing to the new series, right?
Yeah, actually, it kind of did. I think that's coincidental.
I imagine it's kind of like parallel thinking in a way.
Possibly. I never know what CBS is thinking. I'm not. That's above my pay grade. But
right. Presumably, you brought the project to them, and they were either like, "This is awesome timing," or
so. Yeah, I was actually approached by CBS to do the Mirror Universe style guide. And the fact that they were planning on doing a product style guide meant they wanted products coming out about the Mirror Universe, presumably right. because they knew there was going to be a big Mirror Universe reveal in Discovery. But this was all started 2 years before that happened, so I have no way of knowing. I'm assuming it was all. I mean, they know what they're doing. I think
it seems interesting. I mean, like there's so much of that going on with all these franchises these days. Like somebody at the very top, like with a 30,000 yard view of everything and
a studio wallpapered like. With pictures of Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Oh, so you're saying it's you.
Yeah, I'm not saying
you're the guy behind the guy behind the guy.
You gotta edit that out. No, I'm supposed to know.
I've made a huge mistake.
We met for the first time and hung out with you a bunch at Star Trek Las Vegas, and this was for me and Ben really our first experience at. It was a glimpse at what con life is, but in talking to you for a while, you are up to your chest in con life. You go to these quite a bit, and I'm wondering how Star Trek Las Vegas compares to the other conventions that you go to, and maybe if you could give us a glimpse into what it's like to go from con to con and meet people who appreciate your work and see and experience all there is to do with these things.
Well, it all starts with an 8-ball of blow. I'm going to get as much mileage out of that joke as I can. Usually, I try to keep it down to one con a month.
Yeah.
And it's just basically what I get invited out to. I'm not too particular. But normally, I go to Comic-Cons, and that's a very different thing because it's almost all floor with panels being almost an afterthought. You know, whereas this Creation Con is all about the panels, and there's just a tiny floor with like some retailers, but it's not like at a comic convention where it's just kind of filled with an artist mm-hmm. alley and things like that. So I feel like the Star Trek cons, especially the Creation ones, are a lot more, I don't know, more of an event, interactive, mm-hmm. you know, more like a concert, less like a library or a mall. So I enjoy them a lot more because I got more to do, and it, you know, they actually have the thing in a casino,
right?
Yeah, which also helps. Yeah, because yeah, some of these cons, they don't have beer.
Do you like the paneling aspect of it for yourself, or is that something you'd rather that you're less comfortable with?
Being on panels is fun. I like to do that sparsely because being on the floor is where you make the money, where you sell stuff and actually get one-on-one meeting with people. But panels are great in that it kind of advertises that, and then people come and see you and you can interact with them later.
Right.
Also, I think what I enjoy more is seeing panels, depending on who's on them, because that's usually where you get the reveals, stuff that you hear before everybody else. I mean, it's a little different now with the internet. Because, you know, I can stay home and find out literally 30 seconds after the big announcement. So it's not like you have to wait anymore, but there is something to be said for being there live, you know, like this year, finding out about, you know, Patrick Stewart coming back. It was just kind of nice to be there with only those other 9,000 people, you know.
It's very intimate space, you know. But like, that's a room that is like so hot for that moment. Like the emotions must run so high when an announcement like that gets made.
The energy with being there is kind of like being at a concert.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rather than like, you can listen to a live album and that's the internet, hearing the news on the internet, or you can go to go to the concert, and that's the difference from being there, even though you get the information. But.
Yeah. I mean, you were kind of getting little notices on your phone when we had breakfast the morning that happened with Peace Stew, that like something was up and like there might be something happening later in the day. And Adam and I were like, okay, cool. Well, have fun, buddy. We're out of here.
Oh, to be on the inner circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the inside track. Yeah. they weren't even telling me. They were just implying that I wanted to be there at 1:15 and that Kurtzman was going to make a surprise appearance.
Right. And Kurtzman, everybody's favorite producer.
Yeah. And that's what everybody's all amped up about, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't even get the full story. I was just told to be there. And then when I got there, I was like, yeah, okay, I know where this is going once they brought him out.
Yeah.
His arms aren't as big as I imagined.
Do you think that will change? Or the Mirror Universe version of him has got to have different things happening to his body. Like epigenetically, the Mirror Universe probably brings out your delts and your lats and whatnot.
Yeah, it has to.
Do you see announcements like these as job opportunities, or are you just excited about them as a fan primarily?
I see everything as a job opportunity. I mean, when you're a freelance illustrator, you're pretty much, you know, it's feast or famine. So whenever you hear any news, it's like, how can I use this?
Right,
how can I get work? But I'm also a fan. So, I mean, it's both. To answer you succinctly, it's both.
In a TV or movie world, a lot of people will do specs in order to make themselves known to creators. Like, is that something that happens in comics? If you see news about a Patrick Stewart future tense Star Trek series, do you get to work on what that might look like so you can kind of stake a claim to it?
There's always pitches. Like a full spec script is, you know, you don't necessarily want to do that in comics because the editor always gets involved and the properties always get involved. And it's like, why waste your time? But just a general write-up of what you plan to do and how's this sound? And they know you're just doing it to invent work for yourself. But, you know, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. And that's kind of like what I did with Mirror Universe. You know, it started as a style guide and I brought it in just for that reason. And that's kind of how it works in comics. Just pitches. And editors love it. So please write them. They're not busy at all. They want to hear your stupid ideas.
Yeah, it sounds like you're extremely busy when you're in production. I mean, what are your deadlines like when you work on these projects? Like the Through the Mirror came out week to week. I have no idea how that even happens.
That happened because there were five different artists.
Yeah.
I was just doing a backup story, which was 4 pages an issue, which turned out to be a full issue. So there was 6 issues worth of work there done by 6 different people.
Yeah.
And we all did it in 1 month, and then it came out weekly. You know, so it was all done before the first issue came out. That's the only way that works, because it would be chaos trying to do something weekly. When I'm working on something as far as like a fully painted book, I usually work about 120 hours a week.
Wow.
So while I'm working on, that's why I only do miniseries, because you don't want to do that all year round. Just 8 months out of the year, that's all.
So so what's it like being single?
I don't know, ask my wife.
Man, you're keeping like You're keeping like white shoe attorney hours with that.
Well, it's much better since I moved from New York. I used to have a separate studio, and it sucked when I had a separate studio because, like, why walk home?
Yeah.
Why take the train home when you're just going to get 4 hours sleep and come right back again?
Yeah.
And that's a big nut to cover, too. Yeah. Like, two rents in New York is.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. That was nuts. But now I just have the studio right at home, you know? So,
That is one of the nice things about moving to California.
It's slightly less expensive than New York.
Yeah, they really sell it as being so much cheaper, and it is not.
It's not that much. It is cheaper. It's workable, but it's not. Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't smell as bad in the summer. There's that.
Less expensive rent? Oh no!
We've got to get out of here. A little bit of material from Greatest Gen Con. Yeah.
Come see us out on the road.
Did you make it to our Vegas show? Or were you?
I never did.
Too bad.
Well, thanks to J.K. Woodward for being on the show today.
thanks for driving in an hour to get here. Anyways, J.K., it's been great seeing you.
Wait, didn't you guys know this? I mean, I saw you the next day for breakfast, and I told you I got stuck at a dinner.
You were drunk. I was kind of drafting on how drunk you were. I may or may not
being drunk won't ever stop me from doing anything. Look at my arrest record.
No one regrets French toast for the table, though. That's a power move at every breakfast.
I think back fondly on that French toast. Yeah. Nice grilled bananas on there. It was good.
It looked good.
Don't even think about sticking a raw banana on my French toast.
I would say that the one thing I can actually get to regretting that French toast because it was the one thing standing in between me and ordering a Bloody Mary at that breakfast. I was like, I want a Bloody Mary, but I also don't want to take a sip of a tomato thing and then a big old bite of a banana thing. You know, that's just a weird fuck.
I don't know. It might be all right. Depending on how much vodka they put in that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah,
the Bloody Marys were really good there. Yeah. You missed out.
The day before that, we went into the con and we saw a TNG panel with Gates McFadden, Michael Dorn, and Denise Crosby. And I don't know, it was a fairly dry panel. And the folks we were with who knew how to con were like, this is not... Like, don't think that this is the amount of fun you normally have.
It took you to the worst panel ever.
Yeah. I mean, no shade on the actors that were up there. I think that it was more a moderator problem.
Well, what was the... Because I saw on the Star Trek cruise, I saw Denise and Michael Dorn together, and they actually have a good chemistry, and they're pretty funny, so I was surprised to hear that it wasn't a good panel.
Yeah, I mean, it was just... it was a lot of audition stories, and it was like... I don't know what this adds to my understanding of this of this television show.
Did you see any of the Discovery panels? Because those were pretty good.
No, you know, we totally missed out on Discovery aside from the Mirror Universe costume display, which was awesome. Yeah. Like, one of my favorite things we saw.
Yeah. I had seen that just a couple weeks before in San Diego. They had they rent out a gallery on 5th and J.
Yeah.
Do a show like I guess every year now for the past 3 years, and they had that displayed there, and
it makes me wonder, like, as an artist, like, if you got to work on a disco comic, like, what do you get access to in terms of, like, materials for
prep? Well, I actually before the show came on, it's funny you should say that, I had to sign an NDA, and I got the original script like about a year before it came on.
Whoa.
Just from doing covers for the first miniseries, the Takuvma one, what was it called? The Light of Kalis.
Yeah.
I did some covers for that, so I got to see the sets, I got to see preliminary designs of the Klingons, so I was prepared that they might be a little different.
Wow.
And I couldn't say a thing about it. And I do my own podcast with a friend about Discovery, like a year before it came out, just speculating what it was going to be about. And
don't fail to plug the show. What's it called?
It's called Go Trek Yourself. And there's three of us now.
Do you have a dog?
We do not have a dog. We have a cat. Uh-huh.
So
because, you know,
I think what Adam is leading up to is, do you need a fourth? he's looking to cut some dead weight.
Wow, so on your own show, you had to pretend like you didn't know the answers to the questions you were asking?
Exactly. It's a weekly show, and until the show actually comes out and we actually review it, we were spending that year speculating. except I had to pretend speculate.
Wow.
And go, yeah, I don't know. What
did
do
your
you think?
Did your co-hosts know that you knew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I would say it on the show. It's like, I actually know, but if I didn't, I might speculate. You know, and it was just, it was really awkward.
I'm sure that'll hold up in court.
And we just actually got a new person on the show, Holly Amos, who used to work at CBS. She has like that head for details, like the names, sure, of shows, the episode numbers, all the stuff we can't do to save,
oh,
our,
wow,
lives.
Yeah, that's I'm not good at that. Every time I meet somebody that's got that skill,
I don't get it.
Yeah. I'm blown away. Oh, yeah, it was season 4, episode 22.
I can't remember my address half the time. I mean, yeah, we finally got her on the show because she used to work at CBS, and it's the only reason we never had her on the show, because, yeah, there's a conflict of interest.
Right.
And she just got laid off, so we're like, yeah!
And she was like, ooh.
Yeah, but listen, now she gets to be on our show now.
Yeah. Now she's in the lucrative world, well, actually, of podcasting.
she actually bounced back pretty quick. She's working for a licensee. God, she's going to kill me because I don't remember the name of it. It's a new digital card game for Star Trek. Star Trek Adversaries, I think it's called.
Ooh.
Yeah, so she works for them now. Like within 2 weeks of
they had a big presence at Star Trek Las Vegas, as I recall.
They did, and they actually did like live tournaments on stage at the CBS All Access stage.
Jeez. And, yeah,
she was really busy.
Do you play that game yourself?
I do not. Did you not hear the part where I say I work 120 hours a week?
As soon as I asked the question, I was like, I don't have time for video games. How in the world does JK have time?
I barely have time to do that 8-ball.
What do you... that's a performance-enhancing drug in your line of work.
You gotta like put a little counter every time I make that joke.
I think it's going to be one of those jokes where it kind of like, we beat it into the ground, but... And then it stops being funny, but then it comes back. It's like a dead air joke from Family Guy.
Yeah.
If Norm MacDonald has taught us anything about comedy, it's that repetition is crucial.
Well, that's great. I mean, like, this whole, like, world of licensing and stuff is so mysterious. I'm, like, curious about it, but I also suspect that mostly it's just incredibly dry. But, like, so the comics are published by IDW, and they presumably license it, but then CBS has some provision where they get to control, like, how the marks get used and stuff.
It usually starts with a pitch, or the editors, after talking to CBS and knowing what they're planning on doing, will come up, so if it's tied in with the show. Because the Discovery stuff is very, very much tied in the show. In fact, we have Kirsten Beer working with Mike Johnson on it, and she's one of the writers.
Yeah.
So it's very much tied in. But a lot of times, basically, we just come up with ideas and present it to CBS, and they're sort of just gatekeepers. They're like, yes or no, or they'll say, well, this is great, but look, we have something planned later on in the season. We'll do this later, come up with something else for now, you know. But really, the creative process is all done at IDW.
Yeah,
most of the time.
And then, like, when you're not working on Trek stuff, or is it all Trek for you right now?
No, I'm actually, I got a tiptoe around this stuff. I hate it when I hear podcasts and like, I can't talk about it.
Yeah.
like your podcast? I mean, what are you saying?
Don't listen to Go Trek Yourself. It's so fucking lame. No, I'm working on something for, I don't know if you know the name, but Jim Kruger, who worked with Alex Ross a lot, the aforementioned artist, did a lot of DC stuff.
I'm a total dummy in terms of comics, so.
Probably most of the audience is, but if you were into comics, you'd be like dying over this.
Whoa!
excuse me, whoa! So I'm working on something for him, which is kind of a big name, so I'm kind of excited about that, but it's only a small project, and I'm keeping myself available for something even bigger that's coming up with Star Trek that I'm really excited about.
Wow.
I can actually talk about that a little.
Lay it on us. We love talking about Star Trek stuff.
Oh, I met with Mike Johnson, and I've never worked with him before, and every time we meet, it's like a tradition for the last 5 years. Oh, we got to work together sometime. That would be great to work together. And we never do.
That's the classic Southern California conversation.
Yeah. But we actually might have gotten something through, and we may have accidentally let it slip out in a panel that we'll be working together. So now the pressure's on. And we brought it directly to, while we were talking, John Van Sitters from CBS walked by, and we're like, hey, listen to this idea. So we kind of like planted the earworm in everybody. And I will be breaking into Discovery finally, outside of covers.
Nice.
I've been doing mostly Next Generation. Yeah, I've been dying to do something with these characters.
Yeah.
So that looks like, if it happens, which it looks like it will, it's something I'll be starting in about a month.
Everyone has a pretty strong take on Discovery Season 1. What's yours?
I loved it. You know, if you want more, you have to go listen to Go Trek Yourself. You can find that on iTunes. And
nice plug.
I've created a monster. I insisted that you plug your show because I am always really bad about plugging my show. Like when I go on other podcasts.
Well, I wasn't sure whether I should even bring it up. I'm on a Star Trek podcast talking. Yeah, well, geez, I don't want to siphon away your whole audience with my little shitty show.
It's not a zero sum game, JK. That's one thing we found out. One lesson we learned the hard way.
Yeah.
Other Star Trek podcasts exist, and that does not harm us in any way. That's the new party line for the greatest gen family of products.
It's true. When we came on the scene, other shows were very threatened by us. Yeah. And made it very known. Now they can't do a thing about it.
Wait, were there Star Trek podcasts before you came on the scene?
That's what I'm saying exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, there were, but there weren't really. Well, so JK, one thing that we have worked on a lot in the course of making The Greatest Generation and The Greatest Discovery is trying to run kind of a whisper campaign for us becoming either members of the writer's room, which was a project that we tried for season one of Disco. Now, I think our main goal is to get
is casted. That what you call it? A whisper? Whisper? Were you whispering, really?
Yeah, a weak and shitty campaign.
I seem pretty loud.
We deserve to be made fun of for that.
Now we want to get in, cast as extras that are walking down a hallway and then get blown out into space. This is something that I feel like would be just as satisfying if we made it into the pages of a comic. And there are some references to Greatest Gen that are subtly peppered into some of your work already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And specifically, there's a scene in
120 hours a week leaves a lot of time for podcasts. So.
Specifically, there's a scene in Mirror Broken that prominently features one Jim Shimoda, and I was delighted to hear that you put him in there as a tribute to Grace Shen.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about Scott because we never talked about it, but I know Dave Tipton and I are both fans. So, yeah. So we were thrilled to have Assassin Shimoda in there.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Now, as far as being blown out of an airlock.
Yeah. Or, like walking down a hallway and the ship takes damage and we go through the hull. You know,
or
like,
sitting on a toilet while the ship is under attack and then you're ripped out of a bathroom stall.
You know, the iconic thing where the Borgs take a core sample out of the D, like we never got a close up on that, but if we could have, Adam and I want to be in there. So we're just putting it out there
on the toilet.
Obviously, no
reading
pressure.
The space paper,
right? Yeah, a broadsheet pad which folds. But if you have an opportunity in any of your upcoming comic work, Disco being the priority, but any TNG or DS9 thing also being acceptable. Feel free to use our likenesses and blow us out into space.
You kind of took my big surprise announcement away from me because I was about to tell you that I was going to make that dream come true.
Oh my
God!
I am going to definitely now. If I can, I'm gonna talk to Mike about seeing if we can have a scene where people get blown out of an airlock or something because I want this to be done right.
Yeah.
You guys just sitting on a toilet or something, I can make that happen too.
So what do you need from us? Photos, video.
Oh yeah. No. I'll just take a bunch of different photos.
Are you going to paint us like one of your French girls?
Yes.
Do you need us to sit for you, JK?
If you don't mind.
I would like to keep my top on, if that's possible.
I haven't done that since college.
That's exactly all I need from you.
Great.
And,
great.
I have a feeling I'll be saying, I don't know why you're naked, I just need your face.
I said... face, not dick.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that, and I'll even give you the page afterwards.
Amazing. You guys, awesome. You heard it here first. There will be a comic book in which Ben and Adam get killed.
I can't help you with the show, but
you heard it here first. Adam and Ben on the cover of a comic book about Star Trek. It's amazing.
Wait, what's happening? Feel like I'm losing control.
Get back
of this.
Into that 8-ball of cocaine, JK. We'll take it from here.
cover, sure.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, No comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
JK, where do people find the work if they want to get these comics? What's the best way to access it at this point?
Well, local comic book shops.
Your mom and pop comic book shop.
Yeah. Anywhere you can buy graphic novels, even Amazon, you can get it. But if you want to get it right from the source, I would go to IDWpublishing.com. They have all the back issues. So if you want to check out some of my other work, like City on the Edge of Forever or the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover.
I'm sure we have Whovian listeners.
Probably.
I don't know how to talk to them about that stuff, but I'm sure that they're there.
Hey, just bud. Don't... Into Doctor Who, are you?
Cool. When are you guys going to do that one?
Never.
You need one more podcast. You need one more. What do you only got three, right? Or
yeah, we merely have three podcasts.
Yeah. Jeez. What do you do with all your free time?
Edit podcasts. And unfortunately, I can't listen to podcasts while I edit podcasts, which is very problematic for me. It's all I want to do. I love podcasts.
Yeah, it's hard to listen to podcasts while recording a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking about the Flap House and Jordan Jesse Go right now, you know? I'm barely even here with you guys. And how do people get your show, your Star Trek podcast?
We're on the Taylor Network of Podcasts. You can get us on iTunes, anywhere you can get podcasts. All the normal places.
Apple Podcasts, yeah. Google Podcasts.
Or you can just go directly to TaylorNetworkOfPodcast.com.
Okay.
I have a blog where I sometimes show some of my work in if you like process stuff, if you're a process junkie, I do a lot of that stuff.
Love it.
So go to, it's a blogspot, jkwoodwardart.blogspot.com.
You share a bunch of process, like time-lapse stuff on your Instagram and stuff too. Where can people see that?
JK_Woodward. It's the same with Twitter.
Great, so. Great.
Right on. Well, J.K. Woodward, thank you so much for spending the time coming on The Greatest Discovery.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm kind of stoked. I'm kind of stoked to be here.
It was great to meet you at the convention.
Yeah, it certainly was.
Was it?
I'm sure that Rob will edit most of the stuff, most of the noises my dog made out of the episode and make us all sound like we had a coherent and cogent conversation.
You got some great B-roll stuff
there. It might be 20 minutes, but... we'll leave it with Rob from here.
Yeah, good luck.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison, and it's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte. Our music is by Adam Ragusea. So head on over to MaximumFun.org to support the ongoing production of our show. or you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. We'll see you next time.
Our post-credit sequence of this episode is going to be 20 minutes of that.
It's like every time I go to speak, he's like... Yeah.
He's quiet for a minute. Opening your mouth and...
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.